Yeah, hi, Richard Murdoch.
Hi, Mr. Murdoch. This is Adam Beitler here with ALG. You are live on the conference call now. If you would just like to fill us in on what conservative bloggers and other activists could be doing to help out your campaign, what you kind of need in the next couple days, and what you feel is where the campaign is now. If you could just run through that with us, and then we'll go to some question and answers.
Okay, very good. Well, first of all, I appreciate everyone joining us today. We are just down to less than 100 hours now, obviously, until the May 8th primary here in Indiana. As you may know, just today, some more polling data came out that shows we're leading 48-38. Real quickly stated, though, we take nothing for granted. We are going to continue to sprint all the way to the finish line, which is 6 p.m. Central Time in parts of Indiana. And as far as what the conservative bloggers can do to help us, I'm telling you, you all can be just enormous for us just to keep the blogosphere alive and making the point that this race, and I believe this in my heart and soul, this race is for the heart and soul of the Republican Party in the United States Senate. This race is going to determine whether or not we're going to have the go-along, to get-along Republicans or those who are willing to stand and make the fight and really go to build a real, true Republican majority. I've said it many times here in the last few weeks, but I am more frustrated with Republicans than I am with Democrats in a way, because a lot of Republicans will vote the right way in the House and in the Senate, but then they won't get in front of the unfriendly microphones. They won't go in front of the unfriendly crowds to explain why their vote, why the conservative point of view is the right one for the long term for the United States. We have got to get this economy growing again, and we can't do it if we keep in Obama. The reason I'm running for the United States Senate, pure and simple, is I want to help make that argument so we don't have to look to pull a few Democrats our way to win votes, but that we'll have an overwhelming majority ourselves in both the House and the Senate to make sure that we're getting what we need to do done to move this country back to the right. So if you can help us put that message out, help define this as a national race of interest, which it should be, because, as I said, this is for the heart and soul of the Republican Party. Is it going to be the Jim DeMint, Marco Rubio, Rand Paul, David Vitter, Ron Johnson, Pat Toomey, Mike Lee Republicans that are controlling the majority of the Republican caucus? Or is it going to be more of a go-along, to get along, let's just work with the Democrats crowd? So that's why we're doing this. That's why I'm thrilled with what today's polling numbers are. And with that, I will throw it open to all of you to take any questions you may have.
Great. At this point, I appreciate your comments there, Mr. Murdoch. I'm going to be switching the conference mode over to Q&A. Okay, if everyone could, who's not asking a question, just hit star 6 and mute yourself, we would appreciate it. I believe Kevin Mooney from the American Spectator had a question. If on the line, if he could speak up.
Yes, can you all hear me?
Yes, we can hear you just fine. Mr. Murdoch, can you hear Kevin?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Mr. Murdoch, well, thanks so much for participating today. Some of our bloggers took notice of a speech that the Defense Secretary Panetta gave the other day to the Environmental Defense Fund, in which he said that global warming and climate change were actually threats to our national security, and he touted all the green energy initiatives that the Defense Department was pursuing, as opposed to trying to gain access to the tar sands in Canada and advancing the Keystone Pipeline. He also made the case for the Law of Sea Treaty. One of the arguments against your opponent, Senator Lugar, is that he's had a longstanding history of supporting these UN-led initiatives that seem to raise a lot of questions about U.S. sovereignty and what that might mean for us controlling our own policy going forward. That's more of an international foreign policy question, but it does come back to questions of limited government versus getting us too close to some initiatives advanced by the United Nations that may not be in America's best interest. And I'm just wondering what your opinion might be of the Law of Sea Treaty, for example, and how you might orient yourself in terms of America's commitments to various international treaties.
Okay. Wow. That question covered a lot of territory. So first part to Panetta's statements. The irony is that our energy policy is, in fact, the threat to our national security. It is not global climate reality that is that threat. The threat is that we are basing our energy policy on the great hoax of all time, which is that mankind is changing the climate. As you may know, I have a graduate degree in geology. I understand a little bit about earth science, and I like to remind people, to picture the state of Indiana in your mind, and I live in the extreme southwest corner down there on that southwestern tip. Just a few miles from my house is a marker that shows the southernmost extent of the glacial ice shield that covered North America about 80 to 100,000 years ago. So you got that in your mind, a glacial ice shield all the way to the modern-day Ohio River. Has the climate changed? Yeah, I think so. But it wasn't changed by sport utility vehicles and coal-fired generating plants or herds of flatulating dairy cattle. It was changed by what's happening on the surface of the sun and on the earth itself. So the fact that our entire energy policy is being dictated by how we're going to deal with this myth is in itself nothing but folly. To the point of U.S. sovereignty and the Law of the Sea Treaty and Mr. Lugar's multinationalism, I certainly do not see, as Mr. Lugar apparently does, the United Nations as the source of answering every global problem or every international problem. You know, he doesn't think the U.S. should ever act unilaterally, it appears, and even recently in trying to get resolutions to problems in Iran, he would not act unilaterally, but felt we needed to go through the UN, and obviously with the number of nations there that are not sympathetic to us, nothing could be done. On the Law of the Sea Treaty specifically, it would be a horrible case of, again, giving away our sovereignty, of making sure that the mineral resources of the ocean floor is never really exploited, because it takes away any private incentive, because the so-called royalty that's out there that would cause the United States to receive one 164th interest, equal share to everybody else, regardless of who's putting the investment capital up, is just a dumb policy. And it's something I would certainly oppose, as I would oppose things like the UN International Treaty on the Child, which would cause UN thinking to actually enter into the culture of every American family life. I just don't think that's the way we should go. So let's go ahead and go, Rich.
Next question, Robert Romano with the Liberty Action Report. Are you there, Robert?
I sure am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, perfect. Well, if the most recent polls are any indication, Mr. Murdoch, you're likely to at least be the Republican nominee in November for the U.S. Senate seat there. And for Dick Lugar, now 80, it seems he's in the fight for his political life, and it looks like it could be his very last stand, because according to the Indiana sore loser law, quote, a person who is defeated in a primary election is not eligible to become a candidate for the same office in the next general election. So the question for you is, does that apply to federal candidates? And if so, I guess that would mean he can't run as an independent. But what about a write-in candidate? When Lisa Murkowski lost to Joe Miller up there in Alaska primary, she waged a successful write-in campaign. And I was wondering if that was a possibility under Indiana law. But also, if you could talk more broadly about sort of this Tea Party versus establishment dynamic that's taking place on the GOP side. And are you surprised that this is still taking place in 2012, when the Tea Party originated in 2009?
Okay, to the last part first, I always tell Tea Party groups, because there are some, even here in Indiana, there are some Republican local organizations that don't know quite what to make of the Tea Party. And the Tea Party people feel a bit of that resentment, so I always tell Tea Party groups, I have but three words for you. God bless you, because here in Indiana, I'll tell you, overwhelmingly, it has been the Tea Party that is causing the Republican Party to come back to its more fundamental roots of smaller government, lower taxes, greater individual freedom, and, yes, the requirement for greater individual responsibility. Those are classic American values. And, you know, the Tea Party has been besmirched by many as these wild crowds that go around waving their pocket versions of the U.S. Constitution as if there's some criminal element or something. And these are simply people who fear for their country. You know, our campaign has over 3,000 volunteers, and most of them came from the Tea Party organizations. So people who think the Tea Party has died are about to find the reports of its death were greatly exaggerated. We're going to win this race because of the help of all those Tea Party folks. Having said all that, though, please note also that the day I announced, it seems 100 years ago in my mind, but February 22nd of 2011, the very day I announced, half of the members of the Republican State Committee signed on to support me, and three-quarters of Indiana's GOP county chairman that day signed on to support me. This is an intra-party rebellion, against a very senior senator who's been there too long and who's grown out of touch with the people he's supposed to represent. And it isn't one that I don't think he can turn around simply because he's shown through his campaign how out of touch he is. The fact that he filed a lawsuit in Marion County, which is Indianapolis, to force, I mean, he hired very high-priced Washington lawyers to make the legal argument, you can't make me, you can't make me, you can't make me live in Indiana. That sent a shockwave. You know, ordinary Hoosiers weren't interested in the legality of it, but what they were interested in is why the heck is he so unwilling to come back and live with us? What's wrong with us? And then they began to realize there's nothing wrong with us. It's on the other side. Now, to your first part about the unique twist of Indiana law, the so-called sore loser law, I'm not a lawyer, but the lawyers tell me that the construction of the law is such that even if his name is written in as a write-in candidate, it cannot be counted in the next general election. So the Lisa Murkowski example you gave is not something that can occur in Indiana. And he can't, as you correctly said, he cannot run as an independent.
All right. Thank you very much. I think you covered the ground there.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Our next question is from Will Folks of Fitz News.
Hey, Mr. Mordock. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great.
With FitzNews.com here in South Carolina, but I would like to point out I'm a lifelong Indianapolis Colts fan, if that counts for anything.
It does indeed. It does indeed. I will take extra time on this question as much as you need after that response.
Thank you.
And by the way, the big billboards all over Indianapolis right now are, got luck? We do.
I believe it. Here's my question. I know that you were very classy in how you handled your announcement. You went to the NRSC. You told them, you know, I understand if you're going to be involved in this race. I just wanted you to know I get that. Obviously, Eric Cantor's involvement in your race is a different animal, and I wanted to see if you could take the time to sort of offer your thoughts on the distinction between the NRSC getting involved and this new effort by Eric Cantor.
Well, I understand the role of the NRSC, and it is always to protect incumbents first. That's why when I sat down with John Cornyn in May of last year, you know, I went in the door with that door wide open. It was very kind of him to meet with me, and I just told him I wanted to set the groundwork, let him know that I intended to win, and hope to talk to him after the primary. With the young gun situation, I don't know that I've ever met Mr. Cantor, and I don't know, and I've had it suggested to me, and I don't know the answer, so I label this as pure speculation on my part, but I've heard that the young guns act somewhat independently from what Mr. Cantor does. So I'll leave that to you to research. That's what I've heard. I don't know. But however and from whomever the control is made over the young guns, I wish they would be spending their time to build a Republican majority in the House of Representatives rather than throwing their money away on a cause that will not work for them here in Indiana. Especially the reports that I've received that they're trying to gin up the Democrat vote to show up and vote for Dick Lugar, I think is particularly troubling. I think if that is in fact the case, and I put the word if that's if that is the case, it's going to have serious replications to what their fundraising is as they go forward in the future to otherwise affect House races.
I mean, aren't you basically, you know, a young gun Senate candidate? I mean, aren't you basically the kind of candidate that they should be supporting?
Well, from what I've always understood of what the young gun stands for, which is kind of a sharper-edged, certainly more conservative, energetic guy, yeah, I would certainly describe myself. Now, maybe the fact that I'm in my seventh decade and the fact that I'm 60 years old, some way they may say that disqualifies me as being a young gun, I don't know, but I'm a gun, and, no, I am a young I won't roll that one back, I'll just stop with that one, I'm a gun, and I certainly want to be part of, as I said, redefining the Republican Party inside the United States Senate. And I would certainly hope that the young guns, that as far as I know, until this one instance, and I could be wrong on this, they've always been involved with House races. And I hope they can elect some more conservatives to the House. But I certainly see my philosophy as much more aligned with what they've presented themselves to be than with the philosophy of Senator Lugar that has been to be out of touch with his constituents, to vote for ever bigger government, to be known as Barack Obama's favorite Republican, and he's getting the help from the so-called conservative young guns. There's a disconnect there that I'm not quite understanding.
Great. Who's next? Any other questions out there? If anyone has a question, just hit star 6 to unmute yourself and speak up.
Hi. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Hi, this is Alexis Levinson with the Daily Caller. Mr. Murdoch, I'm curious if you can tell me, this race has been incredibly negative on both sides, and I'm curious if you think that's going to have any implications in the general election.
Well, let me say to the comment on both sides, please note that all of my TV commercials, those commercials that end or incorporate the words, I'm Richard Murdoch and I approve this message, are known in the trade as 50-50s. The first half of the TV commercial, I talk about, or the voice talks about, Lugar, the specific votes that Mr. Lugar has made. There is a graphic on the screen reflecting the date of that vote and the Senate bill number. And then the second half of the ad, the second 50, if you will, I'm talking what I would have done differently. So if people see the comments that we put out and the reflection of his actual votes as being negative, maybe he ought not have cast those votes if that's so negative. To the other side, the commercials that he's been running against me that are just, well, he's in the position he's in because the commercials are so over the top that they are not being believed. And I'll give you but one example here, and I could give you a lot of polling data that validates this, but he spent something like $2 million telling Hoosiers that I don't show up for work but a third of the time. And after spending $2 million, the polling showed that 2% of Hoosier Republicans thought I don't show up for work on time. Now, you'd think if he spent $2 million to put a message out there, people would have bought into it, but it was so far over the top that people just inherently knew it wasn't true. One other bit of polling I'll share, and it reflects on, I think, his quality of campaign. In January of this year, the last few days of January, he had 68% favorables among Republicans. 2 weeks ago, his favorables among Republicans were 47%. And that's because, obviously, the negative campaign, he's been running against us. I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable. It's over the top, and I've had many people tell me they've always supported Senator Lugar, but after this series of ads, they're done, and certainly today's numbers is like that.
Got it. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
Mr. Murdoch, do you have time for any more questions?
Yes, I do. I'm traveling, so hopefully I won't lose a signal, but I do have time, sure.
Great. I think we still have a few minutes here. Is anyone else out there, have any questions? If so,
I do. This is Prying One. Paul is the real name. I've got a question, and it's really one that concerns the entire nation. And that is, who is it that is supposed to write and pass the laws? Is it the President, the Supreme Court, or Congress and the Senate?
No, Article 1, Section 8 makes it pretty clear as to what the Congress's responsibility is. And frankly, I wouldn't be here today if the Chrysler bankruptcy had not occurred in 2009. You probably all know the story from my bio, but it was Article 1, Section 8, first and foremost, it was being violated there in part of the definition of Congress shall establish uniform bankruptcy law. And yet the Obama administration just basically said, not this time, and changed the law arbitrarily, put a bankruptcy in place, jammed it through the courts to redo it without an act of a legislative body, but just did it judicially. And that's not the way the system is supposed to work. There's supposed to be a legislative process that works with ultimately a signature of the executive. And I say I wouldn't be here if it hadn't been for that. It was that case that frankly got me better known among Republicans as somebody who's willing to stand up for the Constitution of the United States. You know,
the second part to that question, is there a way that we can repeal or invalidate those laws that have been passed that are unconstitutional?
Well, certainly, let's talk about Obamacare. Can the Congress repeal that? Absolutely, and I feel it must. So if the legislative body acts to repeal, again, the process is in place to allow that to happen.
Thank you. That's all I had to ask.
Okay, thank you.
I wish I was there to vote for you.
Well, I wish you were too. But this isn't Chicago, so you don't get to. So.
And I'm not dead.
Thank you for the question there. Any other questions out there? Mr. Murdoch, could you tell us what you believe is the most important issue facing the country?
Absolutely. It is what I'll sum up in my elevator speech. You know, every good candidate, if you're between one or two floors and you got to sell yourself, you give your elevator speech. All these things are related, but it's one quick subject of three items. It is, number one, we have to reduce the immoral level of debt we have in this country. Number two, we have to get the jackboot of federal regulations off the necks of small businesses. And number three, we have to change the tax code, so we are not simply taxing the creation of wealth, but taxing consumption, because as I'm sure you know, almost half of all Americans no longer pay the income tax, and thus they have no skin in the game. They don't care how big government gets. If we do those things, then we set the ground in place so that we can begin to grow our economy. The issue is our economy, it is our national debt, and how do we deal with it? If we don't get it under control, we are going to destroy our standard of living, lower our place in the world, and this is going to be a country people don't recognize any further. And we've got to grow our way out of it. We can't cut our way out. We can't tax our way out. We've got to grow our way out of it. So first priority is to establish those things in government that will reduce government's influence over business so we can start growing this economy at least a 3.5% to 4% GDP rate per year.
Great. Any other questions out there? Just hit star 6 to unmute yourselves, and I think we have time for maybe one or two more questions.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you all very much. I appreciate the chance to be with you, and hope to talk to you again very soon. If you can help us by motivating American conservatives out there in the blogosphere, just to let them know, again, this race is for the heart and soul of the Republican Party in the Senate. And from there, it can go right on out to the House and presidential politics. And let's take this country back for a more conservative purpose.
Excellent. Just one more time, if you could run through exactly what you want everyone to be doing this weekend for you, that would be great.
Yeah. What I just said is really it. Just make that point that this race should be of national interest. And if you can put out the blogs just featuring a story about what we've talked about here or picking up something off RichardMurdoch.com, all that would be fabulous. We've got tremendous momentum because the Tea Party is about to show that it still has great influence. That's going to send a signal to other Tea Parties around the country that the fight continues. This wasn't about a 2010 experience. This is going to continue on and on. And this is our chance to make government much more responsible.
Excellent. Well, we greatly appreciate you coming on with us today. Thank you, Mr. Murdoch.
Okay, thank you.